and welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I am Luke Buer.
And I'm GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back here on a Thursday evening. It's been a very eventful day in the world of recruiting, to say the least. A lot of different things coming out about the quarterback situation, who's visiting this weekend, who's not. It's been I've charged my phone to full capacity twice already.
Whoa.
I know it's the recruiting time of the year when my phone battery likes to die around 30%. So it's been hot and heavy on Gopher Illustrated. So if you're listening to this right now and you haven't gone over and checked things out today, it is a fantastic time to do so here before we get into the offensive side.
We're going to talk defense because we already talked offense for 45 minutes.
As you can tell, my brain is a little bit scrambled here, Luke. I'm trying to keep my head straight on all these different things recruiting-wise, so I got to get my mind back into the defensive side of things, and we'll be able to do that here tonight on the episode.
All right, so we intended on doing kind of a state of the program last time, and that ended up being a little bit more ambitious than
we
thought.
We kind of went off.
Yeah, well, yeah. We kind of spent 45 minutes just talking about the offense, and it didn't really make sense to make, you know, maybe an hour and a half to 2 hour podcast. So
some people like it. Some people want to have something on the commute in tomorrow morning to work. So if you're listening to this heading into work in the morning, you're welcome.
Yeah, there you go. So actually let's get into this defense. We were doing kind of a little bit of a pre-production meeting and, you know, poring over some stats. I mean, boy, when you look at what they had in 2015, I mean, they had a solid defense, and they played some really good teams. We know that they struggled, in terms of winning games, and part of that was offensive, and part of that, you know, had some to do with defense. And you look at the guys that they lose; they lost, you know, three guys in the secondary, two of which are having very, very successful seasons in the NFL right now.
And the other one was your leading tackler.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And you come into 2016 and we had a bunch of question marks in the summer/spring. And basically, statistically, we had the same defense. Now, don't get me wrong, the competition was maybe not up to the par that it was in 2015. But it's hard to ignore the fact that this defense was still basically the identity of this team.
Yeah, I think you laid it out there pretty well, Luke. When you look at Minnesota's 2015 defense, we talked about it. Minnesota lost a lot of key players from that defense that was ranked 23rd best in the country in 2015 by Football Study Hall. Looking at advanced statistics, Minnesota was the 23rd best defense out of 128 FBS teams in 2015. A large part of that was because of the success of their defense. And obviously, Devondre Campbell now with the Atlanta Falcons, Breambody Calhoun now playing and starting for the Cleveland Browns, and I'm actually going to be flying out there Saturday to go see him play and get to catch up with him, which is going to be fun. But Eric Murray on the Kansas City Chiefs, I believe, is ranked as the number one special teamer in the country, according to PFF. And then Antonio Johnson, Minnesota's leading tackler from last season. They're all gone from this 2016 defense, so we went into 2016 with some question marks in the secondary. Who's going to replace Devondre Campbell, and then how does the defensive line stand up? And when you look at Minnesota's 2016 advanced statistical profile, it's nearly identical to what it was in 2015. And I think that's a kudos to this coaching staff in terms of having the necessary bodies in terms of talent level ready to go in and produce. Yeah, and as you know, it's a lot of different bodies there. So when you look at Minnesota's statistical ranks this season in terms of S&P, It's nearly identical, and it is identical. Minnesota had the 23rd best defense in 2016, just as they did in 2015. Again, some of that is because of the schedule. Minnesota had an easier schedule. But again, that S&P rank really looks into it. And again, it says Minnesota has nearly the exact same in terms of statistical measurement there. And when you look at points per game, Minnesota was the 32nd best team in the country, allowing teams to score 22.9, and last season they were 45th in the country. Again, I understand some of that is because of the schedule Minnesota had this year, but again, this 2016 team really took it to another level, and they had a lot of unproven guys. They had a lot of guys take steps forward. You look at Steven Richardson, who was absolutely snubbed. He was third team all Big Ten. There's absolutely no reason he should not have been in the second team. The only reason in my mind that he wasn't is because he doesn't wear Ohio State or Michigan colors. Again, it's political and stupid. again, Steven was absolutely electric throughout this entire season. You look at Keontae Harden, someone who went from a part-time player in 2015 to stepping into a bigger role in 2016, and I think he played pretty admirably. And then Demaryius Travis, Minnesota missed him in 2015, and he was the absolute linchpin to this Gopher defense, and he played extremely well throughout the entire season. We'll get into more guys here as we go on, but this is another top 25 defense. And again, why is Minnesota having a lot of success in terms of wins and losses? Look at the defense. Back-to-back years in the top 25, Jay Sovell, Tracy Clays know what they're doing, and they definitely know how to recruit on that side of the ball.
Well, let's not overlook the fact that you know, in essence, they basically have a new defensive coordinator coming in this year, but they're also changing a lot of schemes, right? And they were able to translate that into success. You know, they won a lot of 2-4-5 or 2-5-4 or 2-4-5. My numbers are
2-4-5.
Yeah, 2-4-5. And then they also did a lot of 3-4. And you know, normally they were very much a, you know, I'd say previously they were a 4-3. They played a lot of nickel, so almost you'd say their nickel was their base. But I mean, scheme wise, they did a lot. They changed a lot, and they were trying to accommodate, you know, the type of talent that they had, and it translated into success. It wasn't necessarily the prettiest thing to begin the season, but you could see kind of the wheels turning and the things starting to mesh as the season went on.
That's a great point. And as you mentioned, Minnesota was basically a 4-2-5 team, a 4-3 team last season. And for the majority of this season, Minnesota rotated between 4-3 some, yes, against those two tight end teams, but they also loved to play 2-4-5 on passing down situations. Or if they're going against a spread kind of a team, which you're going to see against Washington State, they're going to be playing a lot of 2-4-5. And they also mixed in some 3-4 as well. So you saw this team, this defense anyway, in the first half of the season kind of struggle. And I think it's because players are learning a new system. And even Jay Sovell is learning how to be a defensive coordinator. His first six games as a defensive coordinator, he's trying to figure out the right mixes of guys. In my opinion, you saw in the last six games, you saw this defense, especially in the last three or four, really start to figure it out. From Blake Cashman coming on to Jay Sovell, figuring out how to use guys in different blitzes and stunts, trying to create havoc in terms of getting to the quarterback. This is a defensive coordinator that I think had that light bulb go on for that last six games of the season. You know, they rotated some bodies in the secondary. They got some guys back, you know, Blake Cashman coming in and then getting some things out of the 2-4-5. Again, for a defense to really be playing three different defenses in comparison to basically the 4-3, I don't really count nickel being 4-2-5. Again, all you're doing is taking out a linebacker and putting on a defensive back. And that's a lot different than the 2-4-5, in my opinion. So there was a lot of difference schematically, and Minnesota's defense was able to maintain that top 25 ranking. And again, Minnesota made those schematic changes because they had to try to fit the players to the scheme. Well, how do I always get this wrong, Luke? They wanted to fit the players to the scheme and not the scheme to the players. That's correct, right?
No, they wanted to fit the scheme to the player's skill set.
Yes. Okay, so disregard whatever I said and listen to Luke. So you saw what Jay Sovell knew he had. He knew he had a lot of great blitzing linebackers. He had a lot of talent linebacker and not as much at defensive end. So what does he do? He introduces the 2-4-5 or the 3-4, knowing what, and he brings in Dave Aranda, Wisconsin's former defensive coordinator, and I believe he's now the highest paid coordinator in the country at LSU because of a recent contract he got. But he brings him in with his defensive staff. Okay, how do we do some things here? Because you did it with Wisconsin walk-ons. We want to do that here at Minnesota. And again, you saw that switch really start to flip on towards the end of the season, and Minnesota is able to figure it out. He knew he had a lot of different things at linebacker. He knew he had some young talent in the secondary, and he had a plethora of talent at defensive tackle. So he fits the scheme to the players, and things yep. really blossom from there.
Yeah. Hey, I wanted to give you some credit. I rag on you quite a bit, and that's probably pretty well documented on this podcast. You know, particularly with your Hank Ekpe take of 2014.
Going to a January Senior Bowl type of thing.
Oh boy, I mean, I can't believe that you were so wrong at that. I keep giving you a hard time about that. But hey, kudos to you, man. When you look at the statistics at the at the end of last year, we were trying to predict who would lead the team in tackles, and you hit the hammer on the head of the nail with your Jonathan Celestine take, and he was the leader, albeit barely. He had, let me see if I can pull this up.
A tackle and a half more than Demaryius Travis.
Yeah. And so a couple things. One, congratulations. I'm proud of you. But number two, compare this season to last season. Have you looked at this? Have you looked at the tackles? It's amazing to me how much more distributed it is this year relative to last year. Last year, you have guys like you have a guy like Antonio Johnson with 102 tackles. You have a Cody Poke with 99. You have a significant number of guys, though, in really low double digits, where this year you have a bunch of guys distributing, taking tackles. How does that? Do you think that translate to more success because there's more talent on the field, or how do you attribute that statistical change?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think you look at the different amount of personnel Minnesota had on the field. They didn't really have a base set like they did last season with the 4-2-5 or the 4-3. They're really rotating in a lot of different guys, because when you saw when Minnesota went from 4-3 to 2-4-5, it's basically a 5-for-5 shift like you see in basketball. You know, the five starters come off the floor and the five reserves go in. Well, when Minnesota would go 2-4-5, they'd basically bring off five guys and they'd put on five guys. And so you're taking those guys off the field in different kind of situations. But again, I think it's just trying to keep guys healthy. Obviously, Cody Poke, if he would have been healthy, I think would have been very close to leading the team in tackles. But he goes down with that shoulder injury and he just battles that injury throughout the entire season. You don't really get to see Cody Poke, and I'm already excited to see what he can do next season at Mike linebacker, because, again, his instincts are just second to none, and I can't wait to see what he can do next season. But Jonathan Celestine stepped into that Devondre Campbell role, and he was fantastic in space, 65 total tackles, 7 for loss, 2.5 sacks, 4 passes batted down, and a forced fumble. Demaryius Travis right behind him, Jack Lynn right behind him, Antoine Winfield Jr. is fourth on the team in tackles. So, again, just a lot of different personnel, in my opinion, on the field. A lot of different guys are able to make plays because of that, and you see the tackle distribution pretty evenly, because I think it reflects more and more the amount of snap percentages that these guys were on the field.
Okay, another thing, last season, you know, I guess we're trying to evaluate the steps that this program is making. They struggled mightily in 2015 to get pressure on the quarterback. I forget, it was like 19 sacks. I was looking. This site I'm looking at now doesn't show total numbers, but it, you know, it was a low number of sacks. But they took a significant bump up, and I know that they don't necessarily put a lot of weight into sack numbers. They're more interested in like hurries and you know, hits on the quarterback, but they were able to make a statistical jump there, and they were able to get more pressure this year and years past. So in part that might be why they were able to. I'm not trying to say that they had deficiencies in the secondary, but one where they were able to kind of stay you know, at the same level because they were able to get more pressure, where last year they just couldn't get any at all.
Yeah, I think a great place to look is, again, on Football Study Hall here. When you look at Minnesota's defensive footprint, you look at their havoc rating, you know, just creating havoc on the defensive side of the ball. Minnesota's havoc rating in 2015 was 62nd in the country, so about middle of the pack. And then you look, again, you look at 2016, Minnesota was ranked 21st in the country, so they're a top 25 defense in terms of creating havoc on the quarterback. They went up 40 places from 2015 to 2016 on the defensive line. They went up nearly 30 at linebacker, and they also went up in the defensive secondary. So, again, Jay Sovell knew when he took over this defense that he needed to create pressure. You don't have to tell the defensive backs coach, who had a bunch of guys covering for 4, 5, 6 seconds at a time in 2015, that he needs to help out his defensive backs. So, again, what does he do? He introduces the 2-4-5. He introduces Carter Coughlin, Kamal Martin, Blake Cashman, Julian Huff, amongst others. He introduces them into these different schemes, these different stunts, these different blitzes. And as these guys start to not think as they're playing and they just go out and do it, you saw them getting able to get more and more pressure on the quarterback. So again, Minnesota goes from 62nd in havoc rating in 2015 to 21st in 2016. Again, Minnesota did a much better job at getting sacks, number one. Yes, that's a statistical measure people like to look at, but I think this havoc rating is more tells more of a complete picture in terms of hurries, hits, and sacks on the quarterback. Just trying to get in the quarterback's head, trying to do some things, trying to get in the backfield for these tackle for losses. I think Minnesota did a much better job at that. And again, that's because this defense, especially on the defensive tackle spot, the defense or on at linebacker as well, they took a step forward this season. And you saw that in this havoc rating.
All right. So another area where they improved this year was turnover differential. I don't think that's really a surprise, you know, given what we've already talked about with their ability to get create havoc and impact the passer, and in general put people into tough spots with confusing sets. But I think this is definitely a big plus, right? Because you always want to be on the plus side of the turnover differential, and this was definitely an area that they had room to improve. And offensively, I mean, it goes both offense and a combination of offense and defense. But you got to give credit to that defense because they were definitely basically the reason that this was a positive trend.
Yeah, absolutely. You look at Minnesota's turnover differential in 2015, they were -4, 92nd in the country. And you look at this season, they were +8. And I can't even imagine that how much it may be even higher if Mitch doesn't throw 4 picks
right
in the second half against Wisconsin. excuse me. So it is something. Again, you look at that havoc, you look at the amount of forced fumbles, the amount of pressure they were able to create. But then you also look at the rushing numbers in terms of how did Minnesota's ball carriers take care of the ball. You look at I look at the running back and I look at the quarterback in terms of how many fumbles they had in 2015. They had 13 fumbles and they lost 8 of them in 2015.
Right.
And now you look at 2016, they only lost 2 fumbles. Excuse me, they fumbled the ball twice, which is down from 13 times in 2015, and they only lost 1 of them. Shannon Brooks had 4 fumbles in 2015. He didn't have a single fumble in 2016. Rodney Smith had 1 fumble. Again, Mitch, and especially Mitch Leiner, Mitch had 8 fumbles in 2015, and he lost 5 of them. In 2016, he had 1 fumble, and he recovered it. So again, the offense is taking care of the ball in terms of in the running game. I can't speak for the passing game, as I'm sure many fans know. But again, the running game took care of the ball. And the defense was able to create havoc in terms of forced fumbles and interceptions. And that also kept Minnesota in a lot of ball games, which they probably shouldn't have been in because of some deficiencies on the offensive side of the ball. So again, the offense was able to take care of it, but this defense is one that really created turnovers and gave the offense more opportunities.
Yeah. You also have to point to the special teams in terms of turnovers as well. They were pretty opportunistic on a couple punts this year, covering muffed ones. So, I mean, they had a place there as well. And we'll get to special teams a little later. I guess I kind of want to go looking.
You want to start with rushing defense or what do you want to start with?
I was actually wanting to kind of look at position groups, but it's probably fair. We probably should look at rushing defense because they were much improved there.
We can start with rushing defense and talk about the defensive line because I think they had a big say in it.
Sure. Yeah. Let's start there.
Sure. So let's start by looking at that run defense. Again, I like to do a lot of comparing to 2015. Obviously, you've heard it throughout this entire podcast so far. So Minnesota's 2015 run defense, 81st in the country, not the greatest, bottom half of the country. In this season, they went from 81 to number 23.
Not only again, number 23, but they actually held Saquon Barkley, who is arguably the best running. And now a caveat.
He is the best running back in the Big Ten. And I think he's one of the top 5 running backs in the country.
Yeah.
To 36 yards and 18 carries before overtime.
Yes.
And then he finally got loose. But even still, I mean, they went against some pretty good rushing attacks throughout the entire season, and this defensive line and this run defense as a whole were able to stand tall. And a large part of that is because of the defensive tackle play, in my opinion. We've talked about Steven Richardson. He was absolutely sensational. Again, the statistics I don't think truly do him justice because 23 total tackles or 23 and a half. Again, if Richardson wasn't making the play, he was already 3 yards in the backfield, scaring the hell out of the quarterback or the running back, forcing them to go in another direction. But he did finish with 11 tackles for loss, 7 sacks, and 2 forced fumbles. He was absolutely sensational. Scott Epke had 4.5 tackles for loss, the other starting defensive tackle there. Trying to look at some of the other statistics here in terms of like Andrew Stelter, 14 tackles, 3 for loss, 1.5 sacks. So you look at these different guys on the defensive line, and they did a much better job of controlling the line of scrimmage up front. You saw that these guys were holding their gaps or creating penetration into the backfield that allowed these linebackers to flow through. And that's why Jonathan Celestine is able to get 65 tackles. Jack Lynn's able to get 56 tackles. You know, if linebackers are two of your top three, and even Demaryius Travis, who played so much at the line of scrimmage this year as a slot corner, again, they're able to flow down and they're able to make these tackles in space, and they don't have to worry about getting an alignment on them in the second level. So I think you saw an upgrade on the defensive line because Minnesota was also healthy. Everybody remembers the Wisconsin game of 2015 at TCF Bank Stadium, where Minnesota's starting or top three defensive tackles were out. They were forced to play Galen Elmore and start him at defensive tackle at 270 pounds. They had to play a walk-on by the name of Justin Carr, who had never played in a collegiate game before, and his first collegiate action is against Wisconsin. Yeah, good luck with that. You're not going to be able to stop the run. And Steven Richardson was healthy throughout the entire season. He played well. Scott Epke, Merrick Jackson, Andrew Stelter, you saw these guys really mix in and do a good job. I think Hank Epke and Galen Elmore also did a good job of setting on the outside in terms of making sure that they don't bounce out. And then these linebackers and these defensive backs did a much better job of when they do get through the line of scrimmage, they were able to make that tackle at 4 yards and not have it turn into 40 like they was able to do in the early half of the season as guys were still trying to familiarize themselves with roles. So a jump from the 82nd best or 81st best run defense in 2015 to the 23rd best in 2016 is a hell of a jump. And I think a lot of credit goes to this defensive line because they did a fantastic job of controlling things in the line of scrimmage.
All right. So if we're projecting this defensive line group into the future and where we are in the state of this position group, you're going to have a lot of guys coming back. Stelter will be back. Jackson will be back. We think Richardson should be back. I'd be really surprised if he goes to the NFL, but you never know. They seem to bring some depth back. The question, I guess, maybe becomes defensive end, right? They have some young talent. We saw Teyon Devers, kind of explode in the non-conference, get injured, and then didn't play a huge factor down the stretch. I don't know if it was a function of him not getting a lot of playing time or what, but that seems to be a position that they've struggled to kind of backfill some talent at. Is that an area where we're maybe concerned on the defensive line going forward?
Well, when you look at what Minnesota's losing going into 2017, they lose Hank Epke, Scott Epke, and Shuby Timms. Shuby Timms, another guy that's really played well here the last 2-3 weeks. So how do you replace them? How do you replace Hank Epke? I think you look at Teyon Devers as a potential replacement, but I also wonder if Minnesota really does shift more to the 3-4 in the offseason more than the 4-3. Again, the talent they have in defensive line really dictates that because Merrick Jackson will be a senior. Steven Richardson will be a senior. Andrew Stelter will be a senior. And Gary Moore will be a junior. And the scary part about that is they don't really have any guys behind them. Right. They actually have no one behind them. So That's why Minnesota is looking to sign at least two, potentially three defensive tackles that from the high school level in this recruiting class and try and redshirt them and get them ready right after that because they're going to have to throw them in as redshirt freshmen. But you have – again, Merrick's another guy that started to play more consistent. So I wonder what Jay Salvo wants to do when he looks at his personnel after the spring. Do you really want to continue to go with the 4-3? Because Galen's going to be a senior. I think he's going to be a mainstay out there at defensive end. But I don't really have high hopes for Jerry Gibson anymore. I think Winston probably steps in. I think Winston did a pretty good job. Teyon Devers, as he continues to put on weight, becomes more than a situational pass rusher. And then Tamarian Johnson is someone I know the staff has a lot of high hopes for, and he just has to continue to put on weight because he can run and he can bend well. And we'll have to see how things project. But again, I feel pretty comfortable about this position or this defensive line group in 2017 because they're senior late and they're upperclassmen late into defensive tackle. 2018 is a whole different story. But for 2017, Steven Richardson in his senior year, I do anticipate him coming back for what it's worth. Andrew Stelter in his senior year, Merrick Jackson in his senior year, and then folks finally get a look at Gary Moore, who's been the defensive work team player of the year the last 2 years. And he's just been caught behind a lot of other talent ahead of him. They'll finally get to get a look at him this spring and in the fall. So defensive line for 2017, I actually feel pretty good about right now.
All right, let's talk a little bit about linebacker now, because we've talked a little bit about the running game and then get into the passing game and transition to secondary. But, if we're being honest, I think it's pretty obvious that they have some depth at linebacker.
No way.
A bold take by me.
Yeah, hot takes galore coming from Luke Buehr tonight.
So this group has to go from, you know, not knowing if their coach is going to make it even to coach through the season. He fights his way back and is able to coach on the sidelines come midway through the season, about probably a little bit before the Big Ten season. I don't remember exactly when Sherrills came back. But this is a group that is, they're laden with talent. There's no joking there. Just everywhere. You got a guy like Kamal Martin, who played big minutes early and probably lost some time to a walk-on in Blake Cashman because he was so darn effective, right? You have mainstays like Jack Lynn, Cody Polk, who ends up getting injured. But, man, they're dripping with talent in that position.
I said it before the season. I said linebacker had the most depth on the team, and you saw it show.
Yep.
I'm trying to count the number of guys from this linebacking core that played significant minutes, or in terms of they took significant defensive snaps at one point. We have two seniors in Jack Lynn and Nick Rallis. You have Cody Polk, who started, Jonathan Celestine, who started. You had Julian Huff play a lot in the 2-4-5. We're already up to five linebackers there. And then you look at the freshmen and Jalen Waters, Thomas Barber, Carter Coughlin, and Kamal Martin. That's nine linebackers who played a significant part in the defense, or especially on special teams. So, again, when you look at why is Minnesota trying to add so many freaking linebackers, well, if you can't use them on the defense in the 2-4-5, you can damn sure know you can use them on kickoff and kickoff return, punt return, and they're very good tacklers and they're not afraid of contact. So this linebacking unit was – something that really flourished, and I think, in this 2-4-5. You mentioned a guy like Blake Cashman. Blake Cashman, no one knew who Blake Cashman was until the second half of the season, when you saw him go from one of the best special teamers in the country, or in the Big Ten, excuse me. He was second team special teamer on according to Pro Football Focus, which, again, is rightly deserved, because when you go back and you watch Gopher games in this offseason, if you have some free time, don't skip through the special teams, because every time you do, you're going to miss a Blake Cashman tackle. And it's going to be a solo tackle, because that's how that kid was able to go from special teams to one of the most prolific and efficient Gopher linebackers in his 4 or 5 game streak, where he had something crazy like 8 tackles for loss and 7 sacks in his last 4 or 5 games. Again, he was crazy efficient with the number of snaps he was getting, and he wasn't even seeing reps. I just think that while this unit, does lose Jacqueline and Nick Rallis, they have so many bodies coming in, or they already have on the roster and coming in potentially in January, that can play a big role. Again, there's just so much talent here. And again, I think Mike Sherrills, Jay Sobel, and Tracy Clays really know how to identify talent on the defensive side of the ball, and specifically at linebacker. Again, most of these guys, like Thomas Barber, didn't have another offer. Jalen Waters didn't have a lot going on. Julian Huff didn't have anything going on. Minnesota did beat Cody Polk for TCU for Cody Polk. Jonathan Celestine, Minnesota's leading tackler, had no Division I offers until 2 weeks before signing day.
Kamal Martin was going to go play quarterback somewhere.
Yeah, Kamal Martin was going to go play quarterback at Eastern Michigan. Obviously, Carter Coughlin is going to be fantastic. But again, you have these mix of highly recruited guys, and you have this mix of lowly recruited guys, and more towards the side of lowly recruited guys, but they didn't care. Again, it's not about the stars to them. They trust what they see on film. And if you don't trust in Mike Sherrills and Tracy Clay's linebacker offer in terms of linebacker evaluation by now, go back and watch the 2016 film and see how effective these linebackers were in terms of in the run game and creating havoc in terms of getting in the quarterback, and in the passing game. They were pretty good on all three levels, and there's a lot to be excited about from 2016, and I think there's a lot more to be excited about in 2017.
All right, so going into this season, the Gophers struggled a little bit against the run, but they were losing a lot of guys in the secondary, so we were nervous about what what might also be, mm-hmm. You know, a pass defense, right? When you lose so many guys that are going to, you know, basically a couple of them going to the NFL and one being your leading tackler in the secondary, this defense, you know, when all members of the defense were on the field, especially from the secondary, they fared pretty well in the passing game this season.
Yeah, when you look at Minnesota's passing defense last season in 2015, they were the 17th ranked passing defense in the country. And again, we've talked about it. They lost Brian Body Calhoun, Eric Murray to the NFL. Antonio Johnson was their leading tackler. And they had Demaryius Travis coming back off a torn hamstring. There were so many question marks outside of Jalen Myrick. You know, who's the other starting corner? Who's the other starting safety? And while that other starting safety spot kind of fluctuated from time to time, you know, finally they got Antoine Winfield settled in there, and he played well for the remainder of the season. Keontae Harden played a big role. You saw Chenault, Duke McGee, Ray Buford play roles. Again, there's so many guys that were getting their first legitimate actual game action this season that you thought that it should go down quite a bit. You know, maybe they're only a top 40 or top 50 pass defense. Well, no. Minnesota goes from the 17th ranked passing defense in 2015 to the 26th ranked. So just outside of the top 25 passing defense. Again, for the amount of bodies they were replacing, I think that is just, again, Jay Sovel figuring out how to really work with this defensive back core. Again, I think he may have stuck with Kunle Ayinde a game too long against Penn State, you know, specifically comes to mind. But he fixed it, and, you know, he got a defensive back rotation that he felt comfortable with Duke McGee and Antoine Winfield at safety. Moved in more Ray Buford, even put Demaryius Travis more in the slot, and he really figured it out towards that last half of the season. So again, he was a little stubborn with his specific rotations early in the season, but he figured it out towards the end, and this turned into a top 26 passing defense with a lot of guys that they had to replace. And again, Jay Sovel knows defensive back talent. I believe there's a short list of teams where it's three straight years in the NFL in terms of putting defensive backs there. And Minnesota is one of five teams that have been able to do so. I believe it's the last 3 years. Minnesota's in the same breath with Alabama, Ohio State, Florida State, and Virginia Tech. Again, one of five teams to have a defensive back drafted in the last three drafts. Jalen Myrick and Demaryius Travis, in my eyes, are both going to be drafted again. So that list is going to get even shorter. So that Minnesota's going to be, you know, maybe one of three teams, one of four teams. Again, a school like Minnesota on that list is absurd. So Jay Sovel knows how to identify defensive back talent, and he knows how to develop it, and he knows how to evaluate it. And so I think that this passing defense was a pretty good summation of how successful Minnesota's defense was once again.
All right. So if we're projecting, you know, where we're at, well, I shouldn't say where we're projecting, but where we are now into where we're going, I think it's pretty obvious that we're trending in the right direction, especially at linebacker and in the secondary too. Right. I think we got to be pretty happy with the direction these two position groups are going. Right.
Yeah, when you look at what Minnesota's losing, again, you lose two guys in the NFL again. Can Sovel do it again? We're going to have to see. They lose Demaryius Travis. I don't anticipate Ace Rogers making a return because of his numerous knee surgeries. They'll lose a grad transfer in Eric Amoka, who played some on special teams, and then Jalen Myrick, obviously. So how do they replace them? You know, who steps up in Demaryius' spot? How does Minnesota fill that other safety spot alongside Demaryius? I think that if Minnesota can hold on to Jaquarius Landrews, they have a safety committed from Mississippi that Mississippi State is doing literally everything in their power to try and flip him. And this is a whole nother discussion for an off. If you ever want to ask me about the Jaquarius Landrews recruiting situation with Mississippi State, just come talk to me at one of the numerous events in December, January, and I can go into that a little bit more in depth than I can right now. But let's hope Minnesota can hang on to him. So I think he slides in where Demaryius was. And then does Duke McGee take that step forward? Can he be a full-time player? Can he really run the defense and take that next step mentally? That's going to be something we're going to have to see. Can Kunle Ayinde give this team something? Can he get over his early season struggles and really become an actual player? And then you look at a lot of the young guys at the safety position. Does Jacob Huff become someone that we're talking about? Does Dior Johnson live up to that four-star fame that he came in with? I think Antoine Winfield is going to have an absolute fantastic career for the remainder of his three games. So if I were to project my 2017 starters at safety right now, I think Tequarius Landrews, if he comes in and is good as advertised, I think he's going to be that guy with Antoine Winfield. And then when you look at the cornerback position, Minnesota does lose Myrick, and all of their other corners right now are underclassmen. So Keontae and Shinoa will go from sophomores to juniors. I anticipate Keontae starting for the remainder of his career. But at that other corner spot, it's going to be wide open once again. I don't think that Shinoa is a full-time player. I think that he is a nickel guy for the remainder of his career, which, again, there's nothing wrong with that. Minnesota needs a situational guy that can be a slot guy. But that means guys like Ray Buford, Coney Durry, and Keandre Thomas. Coney's someone that played a lot on special teams when he was healthy. Ray mixed in on nickel. And then Keandre is someone who redshirted again. All three guys that I know that this staff is very high on, and then we'll see who they sign there. But again, there's going to be a lot of open competition at that other safety spot. And I know the talent is there, so that's going to be one of the things I'm watching. So you're going to have a new player more than likely at safety, another new corner. Can Savell do it for the third straight year? We're going to have to see.
All right, let's finish up with some special teams real quick here. I guess probably this is one of our – place kicking was probably our biggest concern coming into the season. We knew that Santos was going to make the switch to punter, and we had pretty high expectations for him having not punted at all. But place kicking was definitely a concern, and man, Emmett Carpenter and that whole place that whole place kicking unit of is it Peyton Jordahl snapping, and I forget the holder's name at this junction.
Jacob Herbers.
I mean, they were super solid all season.
Absolutely. Special teams was fantastic. One final note, because I feel like we're doing just a straight love fest on the defense, but one area that they could have improved was passing downs.
Well, and third down.
Third and longs.
Yeah, third down efficiency.
Third and long. Just third downs in general, but third and long specifically. Minnesota really struggled there. I'm looking at their passing down rate here again on footballstudyhall.com. Again, if you want to know what I'm referencing, it's a fantastic place to really look at stats that mean something. And Minnesota's passing down to incompletion ratio was the bottom seven in the country. Again, fans, you know that. Third and long, it was seemed to be either a screen or Minnesota got beat on a deep route or whatever it may be. So when you look at 2017, that is absolutely an area this team has to improve on, is getting off the field on third downs and especially on third and long. But back to special teams. Again, Football Study Hall, they had Minnesota as the third best special teams unit in the country in 2015. And again, you lose Peter Mortel, one of the best punters Minnesota's ever had. You have Ryan Santoso switching from kicking to punting. You have Emma Carpenter coming on as a walk-on. You didn't know how he was going to do. And Minnesota goes from the third best to the eighth best. They still have a top 10 special teams unit in the country, which is just crazy considering the amount of success they've had in walk-ons from Green Bay. Again, for those who don't know, Peter Mortel, a Green Bay native, Emma Carpenter, a Green Bay native. So hopefully they have one more in the docket there for Minnesota when you look and project this forward. But Evan Carpenter was fantastic. 21 of 23 on field goals, 41 of 42 on PATs. The Big Ten kicker of the year, first team all Big Ten, and rightfully so. This kid nailed a lot of clutch field goals. He's got some kahunas on him, in my unofficial opinion there. He nailed so many clutch field goals for Minnesota when they needed it, and he kept them in a lot of ball games. Obviously, an area that he has to improve is on the kickoff. I believe he had 8 kickoffs out of bounds in 12 games. And again, that's a number that's far too high, but he did pretty well there. Ryan Santoso, for whatever you may have thought about, his inconsistencies, which were there, and that's an area he's absolutely got to clean up going forward, because I still don't think you've seen his ceiling. I don't think he scratched it anywhere close to it. I've seen him in practice, folks. And if he's consistently nailing those balls, it is a different sound coming off his foot compared to any other punter. And you only got to see that on 5 to 10 of his punts, I think, throughout the entire season. And again, his fair catch / inside the 20 ratio for his punts was 44%. Compare that to Peter Mortel in 2015, which was 60%. That's an area he's got to improve, because Peter, had 27 punts inside the 20 to only two touchbacks, while Ryan had 15 punts inside the 20 to five touchbacks. So a 3-to-1 ratio for Ryan compared to 13.5 for Peter is definitely an area he's got to improve on. So, and when you also look at this special teams unit as a whole, Minnesota also had two top 20 return teams. Punt return was the 20th best and kick return was the 14th best. And again, Luke, you were mentioning this to me in the pre-production meeting, and you know, for all the struggles Minnesota had a punt returner, Minnesota had 3 fumbles at the punt returning position. This is a position that seems to plague them because Craig James alone last season had 4 fumbles. And then Drew Olatarski fumbles 2 and loses them. Antonio Chanot muffs 1, but they did find some success there. Again, if you can even average somewhere around 6-7 yards of punt return, again, that's pretty good because that's going to lower the net average of the opposing team. So this is a punt returning unit that did pretty well. And then Keontae Harden, I think, really added something to Minnesota in the kick return game. 10 returns for 26 yards of kick return. I mean, that's going to do some things in terms of changing field position, which was one of the reasons why Minnesota was so successful. So Emma Carpenter gets to come back for another couple of years. Ryan Santoso is here for another couple of years another year, see if he can't figure out his struggles in terms of consistency. But Minnesota's got some talent there, and it's all going to be returning next year. So, Luke, I know your next question is going to be, Ryan, how do you project things out into 2017? Well, Luke, it's a great question because everybody basically returns. Jalen Myrick and Drew Olatarski, Minnesota's going to have to find a new punt returner. And I wonder if that's Antoine Winfield or Keontae Harden. But kick returner returns, kicker returns, punter returns. And another thing that we haven't really talked about is the coverage game, because Minnesota's kickoff coverage and punt coverage was absolutely fantastic. And you look at those bodies that were on the team. I remember sitting in the press box at TCF Bank Stadium and counting the number of freshmen and sophomores that they're out there, especially on the kickoff unit. There were, I believe, 8 or 9 or 10, and even 10 guys at a time that were either true freshmen, redshirt freshmen, and sophomores. Again, how does this defense become a pretty good defense? Well, you have to start on special teams. And if you play well on special teams, more times than not, you find reps on the field. Again, that's not the case for every guy, but that's a great way to start. So it's a lot of talent coming back on special teams, Luke. And it's going to be if they can continue to be a top 10 special teams unit in the country like they have been now in back-to-back seasons, I think you're going to see continued success in the win column because of it.
Right. I mean, when you look at the formula for success for this I'm going to lump them together again, but Jerry Kill and Tracy Clay's team, it's like play good defense, don't beat yourself at offense, and you know what? Special teams is going to come in, so let's be better than our opponents. And for the most part, the formula has worked pretty well, but for them to make that next step, they have to get better at offense, right? And the thing is, they have to maintain this consistency on defense, and they have to maintain this consistency on special teams as well. And part of that comes in recruiting young guys that can play those special teams positions early in their careers, on kick coverage or kick return or what it might be. But there's a lot of guys that they're getting a role like a Blake Cashman or a Jalen Waters, and the next thing you know, they're going to be inserted and make impactful plays in their respective position groups.
Yeah, and I kind of want to go off on a sidetrack there. I mean, you mentioned lumping in Tracy and Jerry Kill in the same breath.
Yeah.
I'm really – and this isn't a shot at you. This isn't meant to be a shot at you or anything, but I really don't like when people lump them in together, and I'm guilty of it, doing it far too many times as well. But it's interesting when you look at a Jerry Kill team in 2015 and a Tracy Clay's team in 2016, how similar they are. When you look at them on special teams and on defense, and they're still trying to go through some things on the offensive side of the ball. But as you mentioned, again, how do you find the way to the field? You find it on special teams. And then as you mentioned, exactly, Blake Cashman, yep, you get to do some things there. I think Coney Durr is going to be a good representation of that in 2017, yeah, where he played on basically every special team in the last half of the season when he was healthy in 2016. And I believe that's going to result and more reps, and he may even be the starting corner alongside Keontae Harden in 2017. We'll have to see, but this is a special teams unit, a defensive unit that is the backbone and the catalyst for this Gopher team, and let's hope it remains that heading into 2017.